You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Kia ora, welcome to The Wire for Monday the 20th of March. Ko Amanda Jane Robinson tōku ingoa. My name is Amanda Jane Robinson. On the show today, we'll be speaking to the CEO of the Real Estate Institute, Bindi Norwell, about house prices in Auckland. We'll also have Generation Zero talking about a new zero carbon tax policy. We'll have our weekly chat with the Green Party this week, talking to co-leader Matiria Ture. We'll also have AUT Pacific Media Centre's Kendall Hutt talking about all the latest in Pacific news for the Southern Cross. We'll have Auckland Women's Centre manager Leonie Morris talking about the upcoming Feminist Parenting Forum. And lastly on the show today, we'll have Cara Halt speaking about a new zine from Babe Vibes all about sex and shame. Remember, if you have anything that you'd like to add throughout the show, give us a text on 5395. But first up on the show today, BFM producer Ben Goldson speaks to CEO of Real Estate Institute of New Zealand, Bindi Norwell, about recent data showing a slight decline in Auckland house prices since last February.
In Demographia International's 2016 housing survey, Auckland went from the 5th to the 4th most unaffordable city. However, data released earlier this month by the Real Estate Institute shows relief may be in sight for would-be buyers. With prices down 1.7%, the Auckland housing market cooled slightly in February, bucking a nationwide rise of 0.3%. February also saw a decline in sales compared to the same time last year, implying prices remain above what the average buyer can pay. Time will tell if last month saw the beginning of a long-awaited price correction or just a one-off dip in an otherwise buoyant market. Until then, I talked to Chief Executive of the Real Estate Institute, Bindi Norwell, and asked her just what this data said about house prices in Auckland.
So in terms of Auckland, median house prices did increase year on year at around 11%. Volumes declined at around 9%, but if you look at the previous year before that, it was down 20%, so actually it's a better story. But interesting that inventory has increased quite a lot, and we saw the same trend in January, so it increased around 17%, and now in February was about 20%. So it's an extra 1,500 properties that have come onto the market for available to buy, which is good for buyers, really, because there's more choice in the market as well. But it's quite a mixed result across New Zealand, across Auckland as well. So, for example, the volume, prices did decline by 1.7% against January, but in different regions it was very mixed result as well. So, for example, North Shore City increased by 5% in January, and Auckland City also about 5% in January. But if you look at other some districts such as Rodney, that went down 7%, and Auckland went down 6%. This is just January. I mean, they are up overall compared year on year. But I'm just saying in terms of January data, they did go down slightly in some, but actually most of them still went up. So it really does depend on which region in Auckland that you look at as well.
Do you think this is the beginning of a correction in prices or just a blip?
We don't really look on month, and so we're looking forward to seeing what happens in March data, which is when it really, I guess it's the busiest time of year. So we'll see if the additional properties that are available in the market or the inventory actually convert to sales. And I guess what we've heard along the way as well is anecdotally that banks are really tightening up on their lending. They're being much more choosy who they loan money to. And so I guess even if there's properties available, it will depend if people can get the funding for the purchase. So it's quite interesting what will happen over the next few weeks or months, whether that happens. And I guess from a long-term perspective, if you think about Auckland, there's still a real lack of supply to meet the demand. So, for example, there's different estimates. We estimate around 14,000 properties are required to meet the level of demand, population, net migration. And at the moment, there's around 9,900 consents. So actually, we're not building enough properties to meet up with that level of supply. So I guess unless that changes in the long term, we probably expect that it will put pressure on house prices still. But I guess there's a lot of, I know there's a lot of initiatives with government to try and address this, like the Housing Infrastructure Fund. We've got Unitary Plan. We've obviously, we'll see their political parties, you know, what their agenda is for housing. So I guess these will all impact what goes, what happens going forward as well.
So would you want to make a prediction on where you think prices are going in 2017?
If I had a crystal ball, I would absolutely love to be able to say that what's going to happen. I just think there's so many factors that will impact in this year. But as I said, in terms of the long-term approach, unless we get some more supply to meet up with the demand in Auckland particularly, you know, that's increasingly still going to put pressure on the house prices. So it really will also depend on where you want to move to as well. In Auckland, so I think that you know, there's some areas that are increasing more than others, and it's interesting that the Auckland City has quite a lot of new apartments, which is actually making it, you know, more affordable for particularly, you know, there's, you know, the, I don't know about young, yeah, the, you know, for one and two bedroom apartments, you know, there'll be more of those coming up going forward, which actually is a more affordable housing.
And as you said before, a drop would be good for buyers, but who could stand to lose if there's a significant drop in house prices?
I don't know if there will be a significant drop, sorry. In terms of, you know, it's good for buyers at the moment because there's a lot of choice in Auckland particularly. There's more supply, there's more properties coming on to the market for them. You know, I mean, in terms of dropping, I mean, what we want at Rhines, we really want is a long-term stable market. You want a, you know, stability in the market that's actually good for buyers and good for sellers at the same time. You don't really want extremes in any case. So I think actually the economy's looking quite, you know, strong at the moment in New Zealand. So that's what, I guess that's what we want, is a stable market.
And I guess not a significant drop, but I guess could there be people who would lose out from a price drop in general?
I don't know. That depends on where they want to move to, where they're looking to buy. You know, depending on the availability of finance, there's just so many factors in that as well. You know, as I said, you know, you want long-term stability, and you know, if prices were to increase out of control in going forward, that's not good for the country. So, I mean, I guess we just want stability. I think that it will be very interesting what goes forward in March in terms of we're looking really closely at the data. I think, as I said, there's a lot more properties coming onto the market, which is good for buyers. And, yeah, I think that, you know, the overall economy in New Zealand is quite favourable. It will just depend if people can access funding from the banks if they are tightening up their loan criteria. So, yeah, it's an interesting market to keep an eye on.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire.
That was producer Ben Goldson speaking to REINZ CEO Bindi Norwell about house prices in Auckland. Next up, Generation Zero has been drafting a law for New Zealand that would put us on track to zero carbon by 2050, a Zero Carbon Act. Producer Ben Goldson spoke to campaign spokesperson Lisa McLaren about the proposal.
Lobby group Generation Zero is preparing to unveil its Zero Carbon Act. Modelled on the United Kingdom's 2008 Climate Change Act, it would commit New Zealand to reducing its net production of carbon to zero by 2050. Drafted with help from experts and collaborators, the act will soon be made public on Generation Zero's website. I asked campaign spokesperson Lisa McLaren just what the Zero Carbon Act is.
The Zero Carbon Act is a framework that a group called Generation Zero are putting together. It is based on some UK legislation that was passed in 2008 called the Climate Change Act. And Generation Zero has decided that we're actually going to draft a similar act for New Zealand and to try and get that passed with cross-party support to have a more sort of ambitious climate law and climate plan for how we're going to reduce our emissions. A group of the Gen Zero crew got together and we thought, if the UK can do it, then why can't we? The UK's Act was developed by a group of non-governmental organisations led by Friends of the Earth. So we decided that we could have a go at doing a similar thing. And so we've been working for the past 6 months within ourselves, sort of group of young lawyers and policymakers, and also talking to more experienced policy experts and others in the field to get feedback. And so we're now almost ready to launch our draft blueprint of how the Act could look for New Zealand. So it's going to go public on April 4th, which is a Tuesday, and so we'll have a website that anyone can check out and have a look at the blueprint and see what they think and give feedback, and also we'll be releasing some policy papers around that time for those that want to sort of delve into the more intricate policy details.
And how can people get involved with the Zero Carbon Act?
So there's a few ways. Currently, they can go to generationzero.org/ZCA for Zero Carbon Act, or on the Generation Zero page, there is a sort of sign-up function, or check us out on Facebook or Twitter and just get in touch that way. We really need cross-party support to get this thing over the line, so we need members from all different types of political leanings to get in behind it and to talk to their local MPs about passing it through.
And how is the Zero Carbon Act different from other efforts to reduce carbon production?
So the Zero Carbon Act is an overarching framework, well, it will be a framework that all the other efforts can sit under. So what it does is it gets an independent climate commission to pick a long-term target that we have to reduce our emissions to, and it actually creates the mandate for the government to have a plan to make that target and some interim targets along the way. So it's really just creating the framework and a legal space for the government to have to do something and have to act, as our current targets lacking in ambition and have been for the last sort of 20 years.
What do you say to the people who criticise the Zero Carbon Act and say it's unreachable or bad for the economy or so forth?
Well, I personally haven't had any feedback like that yet, but I would challenge them to go and actually look at the website. We've had some great experts working on this, and I don't think they would have given up their time and expertise to help us if they didn't think it was a valid option. So, yeah, I think I would just ask them to do a bit more investigating or come and have a chat to us about it.
So around, you know, up to 8 or 10,000.
Shit. The Wire.
I don't care about garage. Still to this, it don't sound like garage. Who told you that I made garage? Willie Cat's got his own sound, it's not garage. Make it in the studio and not in the garage. Here in London, there's a sound called garage. But this is my sound, it sure ain't garage. I've heard they don't like me in garage, cause I use their scene to make my own sound. The Eskimo sound is mine, recognize it's mine. You can't claim what's mine, it's my time to bait you up. I don't hate you, but some of you have got a problem. I'm putting you out of business, why is that a problem? What's your problem? What the heck, my name is Problem, remember? What you call it, garage? What you call it, garage? What you call it, urban? What you call it, urban? What you call it, two-step? What you call it, two-step? What you call it, tell us what you call it then. Why do you think that I'm stupid? I got brains, I can never be stupid. You can never use my name to make your ends jam. I won't turn up or stay at home with my girl and jam. You can't threaten me with no bad man talk. I'm not scared, sorry man, but I've seen so much. Now I don't give a monkey's room to treat the tree just like monkeys. Who influenced me to be funky? Influence me to make Esky beat. I make Esky girls and Esky boys move their feet to the sound. You can hear, I hear you try to stop my record sales, record deals, but the bell can't hold the wasted. If it gets too big and it's trembling, then pop, it blows up and we win. I'm winning, ready to say my goodbyes. Goodbye to the man who don't like me. Goodbye to the woman who don't like me. Goodbye to the fingers pointing at me. Goodbye to the promoters that hate me. Goodbye to the people that's hassling me, cause I'm turning over a new leaf. Get sharp like a knife and a sheath. Stay sharp like a knife, cutting beef. Cut the strings, there's no grief. If you don't cut the strings, there's more grief. See, I get the impression I'm not wanted. So I'm leaving the scene, that's what you wanted. That's what I wanted, I'm on my way now. Wish me luck, I'm doing my thing now. To the fans, let's go. Everyone who likes this, let's go. Everyone who likes that, go that way.
Go that way,
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 go that way.
Everyone relax, let's come this way. Let's go this way.
Let's go this way.
Let's go this way.
Let's go this way.
Let's go this way.
Let's go this way.
I'm carrying weight, I break everybody down. Take everybody down. Any crew, any sound. Any MC who's in my way, I break down. I can show you now, it's all changed round. I remember things were the other way round, but the world got colder and it changed round. I go to every manor and it's all changed round. I want everybody to follow this sound. So don't deny the power of my empire. When I'm here, I strike back with my empire. No more crew, so what we got an empire. Roll deep empire, high flower, high power. Yo, I'm a compulsory rebuyer. Go to the shops and I spend them. Buy what I want and this is roll deep empire. If you work hard then you can be a buyer like me.
Back on The Wire on 95BFM. Remember, if you have anything you'd like to add throughout the show, you can chuck us a text on 5395. Now we have us newly brought back segment, the Southern Cross. That's all right. That's not going to play. That's okay. We have AUT Pacific Media Centre's Kendall Hutt in studio with a whole lot of new Pacific news for us. How are you, Kendall?
Good, thank you.
That's good. So, okay, I guess the first kind of topic that we are going to talk about today is repression in West Papua.
Bonnie Etherington, a young Kiwi author, was in the country last week, and she's written a novel based off her own experiences on West Papua, which is a region which has been repressed by Indonesia since the 60s. And it was controversially incorporated into Indonesia through a controversial act of free choice, sort of dubbed by critics as an act of no choice in 1969. And sort of controversy is also compounded by the fact that the region is plagued by media freedom and human rights violations, and this is all despite President Joko Widodo's lifting of restrictions on foreign journalists in 2015. Harassment and assaults against journalists have continued since then. Just this morning, we had news of two French journalists being deported over alleged visa violations, and these journalists have been banned from entering Indonesia for 6 months. They were there on a tourist visa reporting, and obviously that's not allowed. So we had that, but back to Bonnie Etherington. The launch was very successful. I think it sort of highlighted the repression in West Papua and brought it back to the fore and in the media spotlight. And it sort of tells the story of a young family who moved to West Papua after the death of the female protagonist Ruth's sister. And Bonnie herself spent 11 years in West Papua. She grew up there, and sort of a lot of her experiences sort of are sort of told throughout the book, and I think that it will sort of open people's eyes to the repression in West Papua.
Yeah, and what is some of that repression? I know a lot of people just kind of have heard that West Papua is going through a lot of conflict but don't have kind of an idea of what that entails.
And so obviously, as I mentioned before, a lot of harassment and assaults against journalists. And a Freedom House report from last year shows that access is not automatic, unimpeded or granted quickly. And the situation for West Papuans themselves is also quite dark. The Human Rights Watch World Report last year sort of reveals dozens of Papuans remain imprisoned for non-violent expression of their political views. And this is surrounding, obviously, independence from Indonesia. A lot of issues surround raising of the Morning Star flag, and more than 1,700 Papuan independence supporters, they were detained in May last year while showing solidarity with the International Parliamentarians for West Papua, and those protests for London were in London. And many organisations and human rights groups, they did condemn those arrests, and also allegations of torture also did emerge. And several Pacific nations also were prompted to speak out against these mass arrests and, journalists' assaults, and obviously Papuans, they do remain in prison sort of to this day.
Mm. And those media freedom issues that you were talking about before as well, is that kind of limited to West Papua, or is that a bigger issue over the Pacific?
So media freedom issues, obviously, across the Pacific, comes to mind as Fiji, since Frank Bainimarama took power following a coup. And obviously the Media Industry Development Decree was implemented in 2010, which sort of ended a tradition of self-regulation in Fijian media, and means that if Fijian journalists do speak out against the government, they can be heftily fined or imprisoned. And this is enforced by the Media Industry Development Authority, and a lot of organisations, particularly media freedom organisations, they have sort of criticised these new laws as draconian, and they do see it as a blatant attempt to control the media, thinking here of the International Federation of Journalists. And on top of that, Fiji doesn't have a Freedom of Information Act, which means access to the government, and that information is difficult.
Right, and then the last kind of broader topic that we have today is about climate change in the Pacific. Can you tell me a bit about that?
So obviously the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has been releasing reports for many years, and sort of we know that climate change is a massive issue facing the Pacific, especially surrounding extreme weather events such as cyclones. Last year we had Cyclone Winston in Fiji, and caused a lot of damage, and it is very difficult for Pacific nations to recover from this damage. And some more island states, such as Vanuatu, Kiribati and Tuvalu, they've already fallen victim to rising sea levels. I'm thinking here of the Carteret Islands as well. Many Carteret Islanders have been forced to migrate to Bougainville because the islands have been encroached by rising sea levels. And climate change is obviously one of the biggest issues facing the world right now, but I think a lot of people aren't aware of how that impacts the Pacific. You know, they live with climate change every day, and obviously here in New Zealand that the government isn't so committed to climate change, and obviously they do go on about a strong relationship with our Pacific neighbours, and I think that we should be seeing more efforts to combat climate change, particularly for our Pacific neighbours.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like a lot of the time the talk about climate change is like something that is still to come, but we have to work to prevent it. But it's like, for people in the Pacific, it's already happening and already having those tangible effects. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, talking about these, and we'll talk to you next week for Southern Cross again. It'll be great. After the break, we'll have Auckland Women. Actually, first after the break, we're going to have Green Party co-leader Matidia Ture.
95BFM and Under the Radar present punk legends The Undertones, July 12th at the King's Arms on their 40th anniversary tour. With a back catalogue stuffed full of hits, The Undertones bring their teenage kicks to New Zealand for the first time ever. Be listening to BFM all this week to win tickets. I wanna hold her, wanna hold her tight.
It's music.
95 BFM. The original originator, 95 BFM. Broadcast to the world and podcast to your device on 95BFM.com.
Somebody's laying in the cold. Somebody's rolling in their gold. I know it's not that easy. I know it's not.
Like, naked is the theme. Like, people just love getting naked.
Next up on The Wire, we have Green Party co-leader Matiria Ture. Are you there, Matiria?
Yeah, I am.
How are you?
I'm really curious. I'm good. I'm super curious about that previous interview, but, you know, I'll hear about this another time.
Yeah, just one of the stings. Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. So this week, the government has announced plans to kind of crack down on multinational companies which avoid tax. Do you think that these measures will work, as the government claims?
Well, some of them might. I mean, the problem that we've got here is they've known from, I think, 2009 that there was a serious problem. There was another really significant report produced in 2013, and now they're only just putting forward the option for what to do about it. I think, Mike, there's nothing particularly wrong with the measures. The question is whether government really has the political will to do anything. They've pushed it right up against an election, and measures like this, proposed measures like this, are unlikely to pass before election time unless they go into urgency. So it's quite a... I guess this is just one example of government just pushing the process out, make it so it's largely pointless.
Right, and so this has obviously also come to light that Apple this week has found that they have had billions of dollars in New Zealand revenue for the last 10 years but had to pay no tax on that. How does something like that happen?
Oh, it's as I understand it, and I'm not a tax lawyer, it's just complicated rules around where the businesses are based and whether... for Apple, as I understand it, they predominantly pay tax in Australia. even for their New Zealand operation. So, and that's to do with international agreements and odd tax rules. The thing is, Apple is made over $4 billion in New Zealand and has paid very little of any tax. If it was a human, making that kind of money, you know, they'd be paying something like 30 or 40% tax. So, you know, the country is assisting these international corporations to make profits for themselves and for their shareholders, and something more than just a phone is, you know, the public are entitled to something more than that back. The thing is, like I say, look, the government has got proposals. They've known about the problem for a long time. They've got proposals on the table now to try to do something about it, but I suspect that nothing will happen until after the election.
Right, and just like this is specifically about Apple, but how many other multinational companies could be avoiding tax in this way?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I mean, there's been lots of claims about other companies being in the same position, and it's actually a problem of the law, largely the law and regulation, and our agreements with other countries like Australia. So there will be other countries that are in the same position. Whether they're making as much money, or you know, whether we're talking about other smaller companies, I'm not sure. But the thing is, we just need to have fair and straightforward tax law. I mean, it's not impossible to fix this, as I understand it, in other countries, and it can be fixed here too. It's just a question of whether there is government will. And like I say, the National Party has known about this for the whole time they have been in government. And it's only now, at the end of the ninth year, that they're finally getting around to doing, even thinking about doing something about it.
Right, and so what would the Green Party put in place to stop something like this happening again with other company?
Some of the measures that National putting forward are good, and we would support those, and we would want to put those in place as well. But it's, you know, I think, and like I say, there's nothing especially wrong with the measures. It's just that they've given themselves a political out for actually doing anything about it until after the election.
All right, and another thing that we're going to talk about today, there's been kind of talk this week about charging companies to bottle water. Does the Green Party support this?
Oh, absolutely. If a company is going to use a public resource, a natural resource, to make a profit, you know, to be in business, well, then they need to pay the public for that. We've always called them resource rentals, and these other you know, descriptions of it. Water is a classic example, because public resources and water, or the public water resource, gets used for irrigation, it gets used for bottling water, it gets used for lots of stuff. Now, if those companies were in a different business, they would have to pay for all of the inputs into their business. But companies that rely on fresh water like this don't have to pay for that input, and they should, because the public actually suffer as a result. When we have water being taken out of aquifers to be sold, what we have is, in many of those same areas, communities are lacking in plentiful fresh water. They're worried about the ongoing pollution of their fresh water sources, and local councils and organisations don't have the financial resources to make sure that water is clean. So we've got, you know, companies taking it for free, selling it off, and we've got communities who don't have sufficient security of fresh and clean water for their families.
Right, and the government dismissed the kind of these concerns over water exports as a bit trivial. Why do you disagree with that?
It doesn't. It's not just the bottling of water, remember, because it's the other businesses that also use water as their resource, like irrigation. And once you require people who use the public water resource to pay for it, then you're also talking about big farming industry, and that is what National doesn't want to see happen. That is why I think they have now said that they won't try to put a price on water before the election. Bill English has come out saying that today, and I think he's saying it's too hard. That's not true. There's been a huge amount of work being done on this, and lots of analysis over like two decades, at least in the nearly two decades that I've been in Parliament. So there's enough information to put one in place, but National don't want to, because they'll also then have to make sure that the industrial farming industry is going to have to also pay.
Right. Thank you so much, Ms. Tiria. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All good. Kia ora.
Kia ora. Bye. That was Green Party co-leader Matidia Ture talking about charging companies for bottling water, and also current multinational tax policies in the wake of finding out that Apple has made billions of dollars in revenue over the last 10 years in New Zealand, but not had to pay tax on that.
So around, you know, up to 8 or 10,000.
Shit. The Wire.
You're tuned into The Wire on 95BFM. Remember, if you've got something to say about anything that we're talking about today, feel free to text into 5395. We'd love to hear from you. Next up, we have Auckland Women's Centre Manager Leonie Morris talking about their upcoming Feminist Parenting Forum.
We're very excited to bring three inspiring speakers, all talking about feminist parenting from quite different points of view. It's a very timely subject because there needs to be a lot more work done in New Zealand challenging sexism and sex role stereotyping. And our speakers, we've got Emily Wright, who's a well-known blogger who's got tremendous following from new mums who are finding the initial challenges of parenting. We've got Tanya Puffley, who actually, in her family, most of the parenting is done by her partner. So that's another interesting perspective. And Cecilia Etuati, who's speaking from the perspective of a Samoan woman and also from a single mum. And she gets a lot of support from her own Samoan community. So we're pretty excited about this forum, which is going to look at feminist parenting and all its various aspects. We believe the government doesn't provide enough support to parents, and this makes it hard to be a feminist parent than it needs to be. The government doesn't provide six months paid parental leave. It doesn't provide enough funding for childcare, and in many other ways it doesn't support parenting. So it's very difficult to be a parent in Aotearoa, and it's we're holding this forum in order to inspire people's feminist parenting. For feminists, we also want to make sure that we're not, by talking about feminist parenting and asking parents to look at parenting from a feminist perspective, we don't want to add to mother guilt, which is also a huge issue in our society, mainly because there isn't enough support given to mums. So there's a lot to talk about, Amanda.
Absolutely. And so how can someone kind of approach parenting from a feminist perspective?
Well, it's about that, since the 1970s, parents in New Zealand have been raising their children and in doing so have been challenging sex role stereotyping. So in encouraging their boys to be empathetic, to be interested in all the things that are traditionally associated with girls, and then at the same time, of course, raising their girls to be strong and allowing them and encouraging them to be interested in the areas that are traditionally seen as boys, of interest to boys. So, yeah, that's the main way. There's a lot involved with that, and it's not straightforward. And like I say, parenting in New Zealand is hard, and it just, without even thinking about feminist parenting, parenting in New Zealand is hard. So we're offering this forum to inspire people to be feminist parents, to think about how their parenting and to give them different tools to incorporate into their feminist parenting.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Leonie. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about it?
Just to say that everybody's welcome, and we do have a cost, but the cost is based on what people can afford. So if you can, you can't afford to pay, then just don't pay anything. We'd like people to choose what they can afford to pay. And we're also creating a family-friendly space at the hall if people want to bring their children.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
Life's too short for bad selectors, so improve your musical background with From the Crate. Every Thursday on BFM Breakfast, we'll treat you to a few pieces of delicious wax from Southbound Records. From the Crate, 9:15 every Thursday morning on BFM Breakfast with me, Troy. Thanks to Southbound Records, the largest range of new vinyl in New Zealand at 132 Simon Street and online.
BFM.
BFM, Auckland's original originator for music, news and points of views. Broadcast to the world and podcast to your device at 95bfm.com.
Kei te whakarongo koe ki te Wire, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
Before the break, we had Auckland Women's Centre Manager Leonie Morris talking about the centre's upcoming parenting forum, a feminist parenting forum. And lastly on the show today, tomorrow Babe Vibes, a media company, is releasing a new zine all about sex. More than this though, the zine also tackles topics of the many different types of shame women can feel surrounding sex. I spoke to Babe Vibes founder Cara Haupt about the zine, and I began by asking what exactly it is that Babe Vibes does.
Babe Vibes is a collection of work by creative women. So we're kind of a small media company, and we publish like a variety of work, everything from like interviews to essays to short films. And then we have a shop where we sell a variety of like products and digital prints, and also sell kind of like one-off print zines. And so we've done a couple of zines. One on self-care called Methods of Self-Care, one about creative block called Block Zine, and then a Beyonce zine, and a couple other things that I have written. So that's the quick synopsis of what Babe Vibes is.
And why is it important for you to have a space like this that is just by women?
I think, like, giving, like, women just like an opportunity and a place to make things within like this media landscape that doesn't really prioritize their voices or at least like prioritize topics that they might not have a chance to speak on in like mainstream places. And I'm like really interested in like giving younger women especially like a platform to be able to share their talents kind of beyond like their smaller world, and so that's kind of how I see Babe Vibes, like facilitating this talent that you know might be on the internet but might be in a small way, especially for like younger artists and designers and illustrators and writers.
Absolutely. And you have a new zine coming out tomorrow. What is that one all about?
It's called Sex Etc. It is a zine about sex and culture and shame. it's in collaboration with Evian Whitney from Sex Love Liberation, and so we co-edited it together, and I designed it. And then we have like a bunch of essays from Ashley Reese and Chelsea G. Summers and Jody Lane, and then it's part essays, part interviews, and then we have this beautiful couple-page spread of nudes that were submitted from the Babe Vibes community. So that's kind of what it's all about. I'm, like, super excited and super proud of how it came out.
Yeah, and how does that kind of approach sex in relation to how sex is approached by a lot of kind of media organizations?
Yeah, I think you know, it's all by women or by femme people. And so I think, again, it's like the whole like idea behind Babe Vibes, which is prioritizing these voices. The zine itself is, I think originally we had started creating it about last year. kind of before so many things in this world went down, especially in American politics. And we finally kind of finished it this January. So Eddie and I were kind of talking about the zine because it came out a little bit maybe darker or more negative than I think we'd originally intended it to be. And I think it hits on a lot of like tough subjects, especially around like sex and shame and how women have been conditioned to feel and experience sex. And I feel like the zine kind of gives space for everyone to speak on that and to kind of figure out what it means to be like quote unquote sex positive or quote unquote sex negative in like this world that we live in now. And that's kind of like the angle that the zine is coming out of. And, you know, kind of really diving into what shame is when it's in the context of sex, or whether that's bodies, whether that's trauma and assault, whether that's, you know, slut shaming, like all of these different ways that kind of functions in culture. And it's really beautiful how it came out.
And so where can people find the zine and find out more about Babe Vibes?
They can find more out about Babe Vibes at babevibes.com. The zine will be up in probably 12 hours. And there'll be a link there. We have, you know, of course, Twitter and Instagram. If you just search Babe Vibes, it will come right up.
That was The Wire.
That was indeed The Wire for Monday, the 20th of March. Thank you to everyone who came on the show. We had Real Estate Institute of New Zealand CEO Bindi Norwell. We also had Generation Zero Campaign spokesperson Lisa McLaren. We had AUT Pacific Media Centre's Kendall Hutt and Green Party co-leader Matsiria Ture. We had Auckland Women's Centre manager Leonie Morris. And just now we've had Bay Vibes founder Cara Haupt. Also, a big thank you to producer Ben Goldson and news director Shemina Smith. Penny's up next. I'm Amanda Jane Robinson. Have a lovely afternoon.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.